Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Bit Byte podcast. In this episode, we sat down with Trevor from the Build a Mind podcast, and we got to kind of do what is one of the best things you get to do in a podcast. We got to share ideas, part of our origin stories, and kind of really just have a chat, have a long form conversation. Trevor has a lot of expertise when it comes to using mining for heating within a situation. And he brought up some really interesting topics in regards to that. And it was interesting to kind of just see our similarities and our origins. So sit back, relax, and we hope you enjoy listening to our conversation.
What is up, everybody? We are doing a twofold podcast today. So I am Trevor Bello, the host of the Build a Mind podcast, and we're here with Hans, the host of the Bit Byte podcast. Hans, how are you doing today, brother?
Good, man. Good. I was really excited to actually get to be invited to actually come on this and do a collaboration with you. I've never gotten to come on as a collaborator within a podcast before. So this is the first time that I've actually kind of gotten to be a guest, I think, in a way, when you look at it that. I don't know if it was necessarily you that reached out or one of your moderators in a sense that reached out to me and kind of started talking to me about it. Like, it really got me excited. I mean, so often I end up speaking just kind of within my own echo chamber. I don't hear a lot from other people. So I think it's getting to do something like this and really kind of get to, you know, exercise those ideas that we may have about Bitcoin and see different points of view. I think that was really kind of exciting about this.
Really, I couldn't agree more. And dude, we're in the same boat 100%. This is the first collaboration that I've done. I've got a couple scheduled. So I've never been on somebody else's podcast. I'm generally just like the podcaster, but I've been on a couple spaces before and a couple like in-person events and stuff, but never like on somebody else's platform. I've got a couple more scheduled. Me and two sats. I don't know if you're familiar with the Home Bitcoin Mining channel.
Yeah.
So we've got a couple things scheduled too, but this is actually the first collaboration that I've done. And it's exciting, just like you said, to be able to bounce ideas off of other people in the space. Like, we have a unique position, being that we try to educate people and try to help like proliferate these ideas. Is, you know, it's a good position to be in. But I also think at the same time, like you said, we can get caught up in our own echo chambers and really we're not focusing too far down the rabbit hole in other genres. So I'm excited to get into it, man, and just kind of learn a little bit about you and what you're doing. I know that you're a little bit of an educator in the sense that you like to break down complex ideas about Bitcoin. And I feel the same way. I do feel like at times I'm very like, I don't want to say 80 IQ, but you know, I like surface level, you know what I mean? Like, I some things get a little technical and I'm like, what?
You know what you say again? So. No, man, I totally. And it's funny how I think back to when I first kind of dove into Bitcoin, and it was weird because I grasped it kind of right away. But the amount of education that you get from spending time in the space, like, it changes it level by level by level. And then at some point, I mean, oh, man, so. And I guess we can kind of just start with origin since we're kind of going this route anyways.
Let's do it. Like,
I had read Creature from Jekyll Island, and I think a lot of people probably have read that book. And it left me kind of really despaired with the way that the current economic and financial situation worked in the United States and probably globally too. Like, I mean, it's not just exclusive to here, right? I mean, it's not just the states that have this issue. It's everywhere. They've got, you know, that financial system built on debt and they didn't know what to do. And I came across an article, and I think Bitcoin at the time had just reached $500. And I can't remember if it was CNBC talking about it or something like that. And I was just like, well, what is Bitcoin? So that kind of started the journey. And I was doing another podcast at the time, which I still do part-time also. And it's called the Eclectic Podcast. And we were doing a money episode because one of the guys that I actually co-host the BitByte podcast with, he's really into finance, into money. And he was originally kind of a gold bug, right? He bought a lot of silver, a lot of gold. And he's the one that turned me on to the Creature from Jekyll Island. And after I got done reading that book, like I said, I was feeling despair. I heard about Bitcoin and kind of what its promise was or what the potential was. At the time, it felt really scammy. Like, it was like, man, I don't know, just hit $500 and it, you know, the Silk Road was kind of going on during that time, and prices were fluctuating constantly. I think the Mt. Gox hacks had just happened like a year or two before. And it was just like, I don't know, but I was like, you know what? I'm going to start just by putting $25 a time at it. And the other crazy thing at that time was they had Bitcoin faucets. Have you heard about those?
I have not.
So
that's before my time.
What they, it's crazy to think about it, especially like today. They would actually, you would sign up, give them your email address or whatever, and you would put in your wallet address, and they would actually deposit Bitcoin into your account. They'd give
just
you
for
like,
free?
Yeah. Because at the time it was kind of like, whatever, these things aren't
magic
really,
internet money.
Yeah, it was magic internet money.
I mean, value.
It still had, I mean, obviously at that time, like I said, it was around $500. So, I mean, they weren't giving you a whole lot, but I mean, in today's terms, they probably gave you like a grand.
Yeah.
You know, and it was just free cash, like just go put it in your stuff. And so I did it a couple times. And they stopped that, like that was coming to an end pretty close during that time. But I think they used to give away like a tenth of a coin, you know, in the early days of the faucets. And like, it's crazy to think about that, but it was so risky back then to kind of get involved. And then slowly as time went on, I think it was back in 2016, 2017, we started seeing another bull market take place. And that's when I really started to pay attention. I knew I'd been buying, but I kind of forgot about it. And so then I started really looking into things, and I was like, oh, well, then I got into the altcoin madness at that time, right?
Oh, boy.
Started buying XRP. I mean, Litecoin, I still enjoy Litecoin just kind of as a proxy for Bitcoin, as a test net, just to kind of figure out what's going to work and what's not. I started buying a bunch of different stuff. And I was just like, oh, man, I got caught up in that hype. Do you remember BitConnect?
No. So I came in 22.
Okay.
I came in super late in the game.
So, and I think that's part of the journey that we all have to go through, is you have these pitfalls that you fall into, where you fall in for the scams, you get greedy, you do these stupid things. And I know XRP now, like it at the time it was less than a penny. I bought, you know, I can't remember, 30,000 for, it was cheap. And I transferred that money. It was right before XRP went up to $3. I transferred that money into BitConnect because I was like, man, I'm going to make some money. I knew it was a Ponzi scheme. I knew it. Knew it was. But I was like, man, I'm smarter than everybody else. I'll make that money
back.
I'm going to get out first. No, I was a bag holder at the end, right? So it was an awful experience. And I remember the fight between Bitcoin Cash and Bitcoin at the time, the block size wars that were going on. And I remember messaging a friend of mine that I'd orange pilled, and I was like, dude, it looks like they're going to put Bitcoin into a death spiral. We're in so much trouble. Like it was such chaos. And I remember the emotions were so raw at that time. And I think that's one of the important things that people learn as they kind of go through this, is that they've got to learn to temper those emotions, because that will control you, keep you up at night, make you do stupid things, you know, where you're selling at the bottoms and buying in at the tops. And yeah, man, it took a long time to kind of get that thesis down. And then I started reading more, educating myself more, a lot more about Bitcoin and why there was something special about its immaculate conception that kind of just led me to where I was like, man, Bitcoin only, that's all you need.
Yeah. So I really want to unpack a lot of these things that you're breaking, that you're opening up right now. I guess before we kind of get into this, I do want to start with like the themes in the Jekyll Island, but also some of the pitfalls that you talked about, you know, like getting greedy. But another one I want to discuss is just this idea of the emotional state of human beings.
Yeah.
Before we get into that, I guess I'll give my origin story, just so that, you know, my listeners have heard this a million times, but your listeners can kind of get to know me a little bit. And I'm not going to give the abridged version. I'll give the from the very beginning to the end. So in 2021, when Bitcoin was at about 69,000, give or take, nice. Or 60,000, 62,000, wherever it was at that time, I had a buddy. I was working in an auto body shop. He was like, have you heard of this Bitcoin thing? And I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, yeah, my dad mined it back in the day. He's got 50 of them, and it's worth like $60,000. And I was just like, what the hell are you talking about, bro? I'm working 60 hours a week. I'm barely making any money. I can't afford to buy a $60,000 thing that's like has no tangible like value. I can't hold on to it. What are you talking about? You know what I mean? And I completely just like ignored it after that fact. And this was right after my wife and I had bought a house. You know, I was at the time I was trying to invest in stocks and bonds and, you know, trying to get into real estate because at the time, again, I was working 60 hours a week. I'm making like $20 an hour. I'm barely making 50 grand a year. And, you know, we had this small home that we're paying for. We've got this modest lifestyle, but I wanted my life to be at a certain place. And I intrinsically knew without like consciously putting my finger on it, I knew that I was on this treadmill and I was having to run faster and faster and faster just to stay in the same place. And it's like, I didn't want to stay in this place. I wanted to move forward. I wanted to like better my life. I wanted that life. You know, when I thought about like my grandparents and the life that they lived and my grandfather always talked about, I wanted that life. And I couldn't see a way to that life. So I started like, okay, what's the best way for me to get to that point is like, I'm already working my ass off. I can't work any harder. So what do I do? Well, I could invest my money. So I started reading books. You know, I think books are a great way to get into certain ideas and topics. I went down a little bit of a different road than you did with Jekyll Island. I did eventually read that book, but I started with The Warren Buffett Way. Okay. And this is a great book about investing in just assets like the stock market and, you know, cigarette butt companies, those kinds of things. But one topic that really stood out to me, one piece of advice that the author gave was, Warren Buffett said, never invest in something that you don't understand.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily need to fully understand it, but you need to understand the asset that you own. And so this was an idea that weighed heavy on me because I was investing in the S&P. I was investing in all of these companies that I couldn't understand because I didn't have the time to dive into the 10Ks and the reports and all of the investment earnings and all that stuff. And it was super confusing. So around that time, it was about early 22, I had got involved with an NFT scam. You know, I had gotten married to my wife in June, and we went on our honeymoon trip, and I met this guy who was like an NFT creator, and he seemed very charismatic. And I'll never forget this guy because he taught me a very valuable lesson, and that is everyone's a scammer. You can't trust anyone.
Yeah.
And so, you know, along that point of the greed is that like he offered me this, you know, great, beautiful Ponzi scheme-esque like opportunity where I was going to make, you know, thousands of dollars off of my initial investment. And I was like, oh, this is a great idea. And my wife from the very beginning, she was like, this is a bad idea. I don't want you to do this. But I was like, no, babe, you don't understand it.
You don't understand. Yeah.
I didn't understand. I didn't understand. And to this day, we still talk about it. So luckily, I only invest like $600. And obviously, like as soon as I gave up that money, like I from the very onset, I knew that it was like I was never getting that money back. I was strung along for quite a while. And then eventually I was just like, I'm done with this. I'm ignoring it. And that was at the point where I was like, okay, I really need to understand what it is that I'm investing in. I need to know. And so I came across a podcast. Again, podcasts and books, if they're great ways to learn these concepts. And so I came across the Millennial Investing Podcast. And this is a fabulous podcast platform. They have tons of different brands on there that teach you about real estate, that teach you about stocks, that teach you about these companies. But one that stood out to me the most is a guy that we all love and know, Preston Pysh.
Okay.
And he had the Bitcoin Fundamentals podcast. And this podcast was the thing that helped me start to understand what Bitcoin was. And when I saw it from the very beginning, I was like, oh, that's that Bitcoin thing that my buddy was telling me about a year ago. And so I looked into it and it was like $17,000. And I'm like, okay, wait a minute. This was $60,000 a year ago and now it's $17,000. So what's going on? And so I started into it and listening to Preston Pysh talk, listening to him talk about the fundamentals, I was like, okay, there might be something here. And this is where the concept of the broken money system, the, you know, central banks and how we fundamentally have these flaws and Bitcoin could fix it. And when I started grasping these concepts and understanding what Bitcoin was, I went all in. I mean, it was like it was a switch flipped in my brain, went straight into Bitcoin. And this was the end of 22, the beginning of 23. So I think like November, December, we were literally at the bottom of the bear market starting to come back up in that run up to 40K. And it was incredible, dude. Like literally the light switch flipped for me. I dumped everything. I went straight into Bitcoin and I haven't looked back since. And so the thing for me at the end of the day, throughout that entire journey that sticks with me is what I said from that book, never invest in something that you don't understand. And so to me, I've invested like every spare amount of time, every spare moment that I can to listening to books, listening to podcasts, reading books and having these conversations so I could deeper understand this thing that we call Bitcoin. And it's never steered me wrong. It has not once have I been upset with the decision that I made to go all in. And so to your third point during your origin story of the emotional creatures, like we have this huge emotional state. We are emotional creatures, human beings, and we literally constantly battle these emotions within our heads. And most people have never figured out how to, instead of like being inside of that emotion, step back from it and examine it from an outside perspective.
Yeah.
And I think that this is something that Bitcoiners, we kind of just naturally start to understand, because I have literally, you know, I've only been in Bitcoin. I haven't even been in Bitcoin a full cycle. You know what I mean? I'm going on my third year. I've been two full years. I'm going on my third year. And every single drawdown, I'm like, everything's fine. We're good. Go down harder, baby. Like
buying opportunity.
Exactly. Everybody's freaking out. And I'm just like, cheap sats, let's go.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But that is the thing, is that like through this process of understanding the asset that I own, I have learned that it doesn't matter what the market says,
right?
You know, about price. It matters the fundamentals. Nothing has changed. Yep. Bitcoin is still the same thing that it was when I got into it. And so to me, that says, okay, well, if it goes down, it's an excellent buying opportunity. And if it goes up, just hold on.
Yeah.
So that's my origin story. And that's what I wanted to get to with that whole point of emotional states.
No, and I think it's interesting how the parallels, I mean, even though you've kind of gone through, you know, a shorter, more condensed version, everything you've hit on is very similar to what I've went through, right? And I think it's all part of that journey of becoming a Bitcoiner. And those emotional aspects that you're talking about, I mean, and you see it in traditional markets as well. Like they always talk about the animal spirits, right? Like bear market, bull market, like everything. When you look at the economy and you look at the stock market in general, so much of that is all about emotional feelings. It's not about fundamentals most of the time. Because most of the time, nothing has changed. You saw NVIDIA with their, you know, the AI stock drop, right? I mean, with their chip manufacturing. Did something change with NVIDIA? Were they not producing chips anymore? No. But it's an emotional response. Yeah.
You're seeing it with Tesla. I mean, Tesla stock has dropped, what, 50% because people are burning up Teslas in the street, all because Elon Musk is affiliated with the government and doing this Doge thing. I mean, nothing has changed about Tesla's stock. Nothing has changed fundamentally about the company. In fact, it is a stronger company today than it was 4 years ago.
Yeah. It's emotional. It has nothing to do with what the fundamentals of the company or the products actually are. And when you look at Bitcoin, it's funny because, I mean, you've learned it faster than I did because it took me a couple cycles to stop that emotional response, like to where I was like awake at night, like, oh my God, am I making the right decision? Am I doing the right thing? Like it took me some time before I realized, you know what? Let it go down. It's fine. I have seen it come back every single time and come back stronger. You know, mm-hmm. And it's hard. And I think people tend to look at things in such a short time frame. They want that immediate return. They always think, well, if I buy Bitcoin, I'm just going to get immediately rich. No, that's not how it works. It takes time and discipline. You can't sell. It's so hard to time markets. I've had friends that have tried to, you know, sell, you know, what they think are the tops and then buy back in at the bottoms. And they've screwed themselves and they end up with less Bitcoin than what they had before.
Mm-hmm. And this is something that, you know, I've had so many people tell me, well, if you understand the dynamics and you know understand the price of producing a Bitcoin and all these things, like, you can time it. And I'm like, okay, maybe, but am like, look, dude, going back to my point earlier, is like, I have worked very hard. I'm 28 years old. I have worked very hard to get what little I have in life, and I am not willing to risk everything that I've built up so far. Because like I said, I put everything in Bitcoin. I am all in.
Yeah.
So am I willing to risk everything that I've put in for the slight chance that I could be right and like increase that 5x? No, I'm not. Because I know that if I hold for 4 years, everything that I've got in here will be worth more than it is today. I know that fundamentally. Is it going to be worth double? Is it going to be worth 50% more? Is it going to be worth 1,000% more? I don't know.
Yeah.
But I do know that it's going to be worth more. And so that to me is like the fundamental aspect. Like I'm a very risk averse person, which is interesting that I got into Bitcoin, because like, it's risky for people to dive down this rabbit hole and start to understand. But, and this is another point I want to make. So I talked about that NFT scam that I got into.
Yeah.
Okay. I have had a very condensed, like, educational journey.
You hit on everything, like I said, that I went through. Oh. You're like, you've got it in the short term.
But here's the thing. So after, my wife told me that from the very beginning, this is a bad idea. My wife was if she's listening, which she's not, I know she's not, but like, you know, she was right. And she's generally always right. Right after that NFT scandal, like, that I got scammed out of, I started buying Bitcoin, and she was not okay with it. She was like, this is another thing that you are going to lose our money on. And I had to like sit down with her and say, no, babe, this is different. And she's like, I don't understand how it's different. I don't get it. And I'm like, well, it's because of these. And I just mansplained it to her and she didn't understand. And the thing for me, the best point in my journey, like through everything that I've been through, the best part in my journey was the moment when I told my wife, you know, this was like 8 months ago. I told my wife that Bitcoin was down and she said, did we buy more? You know what I mean? Because
that's a win.
That's a win.
You won.
But here's the thing. For the last 2 years, I have nonstop talked about Bitcoin, and like any conversation that revolves around situational problems and like what's happening in the markets and like global macroeconomics, whatever, I always bring it back to what the problem is. And the fundamental problem with all of these issues is the money. The money's broken.
Yeah.
And so she has rolled her eyes a million times. She sighs every time I bring Bitcoin up. She doesn't do that anymore because she understands that I am not coming from a place of ignorance anymore. I'm coming from a place of like truly understanding the bare minimum. I mean, I will not say that I understand Bitcoin. Like I know the bare minimum to like make it through. But she has watched me go through this journey of not understanding the things that I'm putting my money to fully understanding like some level of what I'm investing in. And she may not be a Bitcoiner, but she trusts me to make that decision and to like have the best thing in mind for our family. And that to me, above and beyond everything else, that to me was the moment where I was like, I am doing the right thing for my family. And I don't care if it takes 20 years to get to the point where we want to get to, we're going to get there.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing. Like I said, it's not a get rich quick thing, right? Like it's one of those slow grinds. I've heard it likened, and you probably heard this too, it's likened to, it's like winning the lottery, but in slow motion. It takes time. It takes time to get there. And, you know, it's funny too. My wife just recently, I think maybe about a year ago, she finally started buying Bitcoin on her own because she has her own separate accounts and things. So
love that.
She finally like, so what I got her a hardware wallet, you know, kind of for her birthday. I was like, I want you to learn self-custody, because part of my fear is that if I die, like if I get into an accident traveling or something like that, I want her to understand how to access this stuff because I want her to have that. I've thought about like, we need to create some sort of a, in case of emergency kind of thing, to where if you are doing self-custody or anything like that, like you need to be able to explain to them how to access these things, because they're not right now. I'm sure they'll get easier as time goes on. But I mean, right now it's kind of a, it's a daunting process. The first time you transfer money to your hardware wallet, like it's terrifying, right? Like you're like, oh my God, okay, that's $10,000. That's going through the network. And yeah, you can look at it, you know, look at the transaction piece moving across and you're like, okay, God, I made it. But it's like you mess up with one key, like you sent that money to nowhere later. Yeah, like
it's gone.
It's gone. So it's terrifying going through that. But learning that self-custody and that self-responsibility aspect of it, I think that's something that we really need to push, especially as people are coming on board, as this is becoming more and more ubiquitous across. I mean, when you got presidents talking about, you know, strategic reserves, those types of things, more and more likely is going to be that, you know, that personal self-custody thing is going to become so important, and being able to transmit that information to your loved ones, I think is going to be very powerful, unless you want to be like Michael Saylor and just take it to your grave with you. But, you know,
well, yeah, but the thing is that we're like, I don't know about everybody else, but for me specifically, I'm not doing this for me. I'm doing this for them.
Yeah.
You know, I've got an 8-month old son, and I've been with my wife for, you know, 10 plus years. And it's like, I'm not doing this for me. I'm doing it for them. I'm trying to give them the life that they deserve. And if I die, then like what? The Bitcoin just disappears? Like it's just gone? You know what I mean? Like that's not the point. That's not the point of this energy and time that I've spent to build this up. And this is the thing that I try to stress to people, is that like no coiners, Bitcoiners alike, we all have this finite resource, and that is our time. Absolutely. That is our life force. And we trade that time, we trade that life force for this thing that we call money. And whatever form your money takes kind of dictates the things that you can do with your life, the way that you can live your life. And if you want to, like, I tried to frame this to my sister, is like, if you want to live this high quality, like decent lifestyle, you need to be able to take that life force, that energy, and transfer it into something that cannot be stolen, cannot be degraded over time. And that used to be gold,
yeah.
But now we have Bitcoin. And for me, it's like, okay, that's great. I'm trading my life force, my time, my energy for Bitcoin. But what happens when inevitably I'm gone?
Yeah.
And how do I make sure that my loved ones, the people that I'm doing this for, can also access that energy that I've transmuted into money? And so I think, to your point, you know, like making sure that we educate our family members, our loved ones, in a way that they can understand. Because this is the thing that I have had to learn over this journey, is that like, I am not the best teacher. I'm not very good at explaining concepts in a way that other people can understand them, especially my wife. Because if anybody who's married knows, like is married, that they know that you and your wife do not see the world the same way.
No.
You don't understand things the same way. And so if you try to explain things to her from your frame of reference, it's going to go completely over her head, and she's just going to roll her eyes and say, whatever, dude. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so to me, it's like trying to find that balance of like explaining to her what this thing is and how to use it without like over explaining to where she's so confused and doesn't understand and just wants to check out.
Yeah. No, and that is such a difficult thing to tackle, because I mean, everybody's modalities for learning is so different whenever you dive into that. And it's always going to be one thing that catches their attention and catches their brain and their imagination in a way that it allows them to kind of start to see this bigger world that exists within Bitcoin and the possibilities of it all. My sister, I mean, you were talking about your sister. My sister, I have tried so many years to get her to buy, because I'm like, I think last time, kind of probably around the cycle that you were getting in, it was like $7,000. I was like, I want you to just buy a tenth, $700. I know you've got the money. Just buy a tenth. Just do it. Like, don't think
a little bit.
Just a little bit. Just get a little bit in there. And it was, she would not do it. And I have tried so many times. I've stopped. I've gotten, I feel like I've beaten my head against the wall. Like I've given up talking to her about it. And then other friends, like, they've been able to just kind of pick it up as time has gone on, you know, those types of things. I was in a car ride for about 8 hours with a buddy of mine the other day, and he works as on a board for a bank. And I was asking him, I was like, you know, what's going on with you guys in Bitcoin? Are you guys going to start to custody it? Are you guys going to do anything like that? Like, if they're going to custody for their clients, anything along those lines. He immediately was like, oh, I don't know about that. It seems so scammy, price fluctuations, all this kind of stuff. And I said, you know, I understand you like gold and I get that. I said, but what I want you to ask yourself, and you probably heard this before too, is does the future, when you look at it, are you seeing a more digital world or a less digital world?
Yeah, that's a good one.
And he was like, that's a good point. And I was like, Bitcoin is basically money of the internet. Like, if you think of sovereign countries that exist out there, the internet has its sovereign currency and it's Bitcoin. So, I mean, as we move towards this digital age where everything is going to become, you know, more integrated with AI and we live more and more in these virtual states, you need that frictionless payment system to work that's not backed by a government or anybody else or any bureaucracy or any Fed chair or anything like that. That has its own supply and its own network capabilities all based off an algorithm, you know? And so I don't know if that kind of broke through to him or not. He, you know, he may have just been like, just saying that just to be like, you know, whatever, just stop talking.
Just shut up, Bitcoin.
Because I've talked to him about it a couple of times and I was kind of curious, you know, with the way that the landscape was changing in the financial systems towards a little bit more friendly towards Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what he says. I'll ask him again in about 6 more months, see where they're at.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, sometimes it takes time, you know, to the point of like the sister thing is like, I still haven't broken through to my sister. The only reason she owns Bitcoin is because I buy it for her. You know what I mean? Like on her birthday, I'm like, here's some Bitcoin, like on her, like whatever. I was just like, I send it to her wallet. I've set her up with it. But like, I still cannot get her to buy it to this day. My best friend, like, he kind of gets it. He's starting to grasp it. His wife is a little bit more headstrong than he is. He's more of a, like, I'm just going to go with the flow, smoke some weed, just chill and vibe out, like, let them take care of it. And his wife is very, like, I love her to death. She's very, like, headstrong. I'm taking care of this. I'm handling the situation. But she cannot grasp Bitcoin. And for the longest time, she's like, well, I can't take it to the store. I can't buy anything with it. And I've tried to, like, to me, like, when someone says that, I know that their fundamental perspective on money is completely skewed. It's like before we can get them to understand what Bitcoin is, we have to break down their ideas of money and rebuild them from the ground up. And so what I always say is, okay, well, like, do you believe in gold? Do you believe that gold is a store of value? And 9 times out of 10, they're like, well, yeah, I mean, you buy gold, it goes up in value or it holds its value at least. And look, okay, well, can you go to the grocery store and buy gold? Like, use your gold to buy goods and services? And they're like, no. And I'm like, okay, well, like, that's Bitcoin. At the end of the day, that is Bitcoin. It is a store of value. It may not have that medium of exchange component where you can go and purchase goods and services with it, like, at a fundamental level, like, because you can still do that with Bitcoin, but it takes a roundabout way and you pay taxes on it, all that, whatever. We don't have to get into that. But the idea is that, like, when you can help someone break down their current misconceptions of money, you can start to reframe it and rebuild it from this idea that Bitcoin is a better money and money doesn't have to be a physical good in order for it to be good money. It can be digital. And that is the thing that I'm trying to get people to understand. And my buddy, he's on board. Like, he gets it. You know what I mean? But until, like, because they're like the unified team, you know what I mean? He doesn't do anything that she's not okay with, kind of thing. So until, like, I can get her completely on board with it, they're not going to buy in. And I told it because they want to buy a house. They want to save for a house. And she's like, well, I want to take $100 every couple weeks and put it in towards the savings account. And I said, you know, Brianna, like I understand your beliefs and your opinions and your views on what Bitcoin is and what dollars are. Do me this, like, do this favor for me. Take your $75 and put it in your savings account. Put that away. Take $25 and put it in Bitcoin. And just over the exact 4-year time horizon, put your $75 in your savings account, put your $25 in your Bitcoin account and see which one grows faster.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if they've started doing that yet. I can't say whether or not they have. Every once in a while, I check up on them and I see if they're doing it. But, you know, I fundamentally believe that if you do that, if you don't understand Bitcoin and you do that, you will understand Bitcoin. After 4 years, you will see.
Yeah. Yeah. You'll become a believer, right? You know what I think is kind of shocking too, is that so many people still believe that the US dollar is still backed by gold.
Oh my God. It is annoying.
Isn't that crazy? Like a lot of people still believe that. I mean, when they were talking about, Doge going into Fort Knox and kind of auditing that, they're like, oh, what if it's not there? Like, what does it matter? Like, we haven't been backed by gold since the 70s. You know, it's like, who cares? What does it matter if it's there or not? That's not going to affect the dollar. And one thing else that we kind of talked about kind of in our pre-meeting that we were kind of going through, and it's obviously in your name, the Build a Mine podcast. How did you get into mining? Like, how did that switch take place?
I love this story. And the reason why I love this is because, you know, my journey down the rabbit hole of understanding Bitcoin, like, accelerated tenfold when I got into Bitcoin mining. And I guess I'll preface this by saying that I fundamentally believe that anyone who wants to get into mining can and should get into Bitcoin mining. Yeah. From a perspective of securing the Bitcoin network and making sure that it proliferates into the future. Now, all that being said, I don't think everyone should mine. I don't think that it's for everyone. I think it's for anyone, not for everyone. And there is like a minute distinction there. So I got into Bitcoin mining the beginning of 2024. So like literally just over a year ago. And I had heard about it. I was down the rabbit hole. I was learning about Bitcoin. And I heard about mining and it was like, oh, it was this like computer that you buy and you can actually like turn electricity into Bitcoin. I was like, well, that's awesome. I want to stack more sats. I want more Bitcoin. Like, let's
that easy. Oh, yeah,
it's that easy. It's not.
Yeah.
So I didn't tell my wife and, you know, like she was just finally starting to get on board about like this whole idea of Bitcoin, still in the rolling her eyes phase. I bought an S9, and if anybody's not familiar, it's just like one of the progenitors of like the S19s and the S21s that you get from Bitmain. There were some series before like the S7 and the S1. Bitcoin mining goes like the ASIC version of Bitcoin mining goes all the way back to 2013, and the S9 came out, I want to say 2016, 2017 era. I'm not exactly sure on that.
I think that's right. Yeah.
I bought this machine. 15 terahash at like 1,000 watts. I plugged it in, put it on the countertop, and she had no idea. She had no idea. That was it, dude. That was it. The first two things that I realized about Bitcoin mining that nobody told me was these things are loud as hell and they put off a lot of heat.
Yeah.
And so long story short, I'm sitting in my living room. I got all the doors, the windows open. This one little S9 is like, there's my room is like 80 degrees. My cats are in the bedroom. They are at the end of the house, just like tucked away underneath the bed or something, hiding. My dog is like sitting on the floor, kind of like shaking. She's like, what the hell is this? My wife comes home. She gets out of the car and she can hear this thing in the driveway. And she comes through the door and I've got my headphones on. I'm just chilling. You know what I mean? Like I'm a Bitcoiner. And she looks at me and she's like, what the hell is that? And I said, babe, it's our Bitcoin miner. We're mining Bitcoin. She's like, I don't give a flying F what that thing is doing. You get that thing out of my house right now. And this led me down this journey of understanding what to do with a Bitcoin miner. Yeah. You know, like we talk about underclocking, we talk about overclocking, and this is just the idea of like ramping down the energy input of a miner to like make it quieter, make it produce less and more efficiently. So if you like underclock a machine, you can make it produce less Bitcoin, but in a more efficient manner, which means you're spending less energy to get that Bitcoin versus overclocking, which is like dumping as much energy into it as possible and like trying to ramp up that terahash output. But when you underclock, it also reduces the fan speeds, the clock speeds of the fans, because it doesn't need to push as much air over the chips. So from a fundamental, from like a mechanical perspective of what a Bitcoin miner is doing, a Bitcoin miner is just the today's Bitcoin miner, the ASIC chip version was. And I don't like calling them ASICs because we have ASICs in everything. I mean, an ASIC is an application-specific integrated circuit, and those things exist all over the place. They do one thing and one thing only. So I don't like calling Bitcoin miners ASICs. So a Bitcoin miner has ASICs inside. They're these chips that do one thing only, and it's mine the SHA-256 algorithm. But what they do is they convert the electricity from the wall, you know, your electricity coming in, they convert that into hashes. And those hashes, you know, they're basically guesses towards the Bitcoin network that are trying to find a number. It's called a nonce. It's not, they're not doing mathematical
calculations.
Calculations like everybody thinks. It's literally, they are trying to find a number. And when they find that number, they're rewarded. And so it's a huge number. It's not just like ones and twos. It's like a huge number, and it's called a nonce. So you're taking that energy, you're converting it into hashes, and you're trying to guess, and you're trying to be the first one to guess. So going back to this fundamental, this idea of like, you know, learning how to manage this Bitcoin miner, I had also learned that it produces a lot of heat. And this is the thing that I'm most excited about Bitcoin mining and why I believe that it's for anyone who wants to get into it. We as human beings, we want to live in comfort.
Yeah.
Okay. And most of that comfort comes from having the ideal temperature. We want ideal comfort water. You know, we want to make sure our water is like 96, 98, 104 degrees, depending on if you're, you know, a woman and like to shower in Satan's water, or you're a man and you're like, I like it a little cooler. We all know that story. But so we all want to be comfortable. We want a comfortable living environment. Plants and animals, they do the same thing. You know, like an animal and a plant will grow stronger, more robust if it's in an ideal temperature, an ideal climate. So Bitcoin miners are just heaters. They're just resistance heaters. And so for me, it's like this idea, and this is what I talk about a lot on the podcast with a bunch of the heat punks. We are heat punks. We take hash rate heating and we apply it into our lives.
I haven't heard that before. Heat punks.
Yeah,
the is heat that, punks. Is we that like something punks. You guys have like keyed, or was that something
yeah,
that just...
Yeah, so this is a term coined by Tyler Stevens. I have his book up here, the Bitcoin Mining Heat Reuse book. I suggest anybody who wants to learn about heat reuse, go and buy this book. It's a phenomenal like breakdown of it. But Tyler Stevens, he coined this term, heat punks. And it's just this idea, you know, like there's been the cypherpunks and other punk genres before. But we are fundamentally, we believe in Bitcoin and what Bitcoin can do. But Bitcoin mining, like Bitcoin is not the product. Heat is. Heat is the product from Bitcoin mining.
Yeah.
Bitcoin is the byproduct. And the thing is that when you plug one of these machines in, like I said earlier, you realize that it produces a lot of heat. And so not only do you have to mitigate the sound, the noise levels, you also have to mitigate this heat. And most people, like these industrial settings, these large giant pubcos, mining operations, they're just venting that heat in the atmosphere. And the more heat that they can pull off those chips, the more efficient their chips run and the more terahash output that they get. Heat punks, we said, okay, we want to mine Bitcoin. We can't afford to do it in this large scale, you know, elephant class mining operation. What can we do? Well, we already need heat. I'm already paying for heat. You know what I mean? Every winter, I turn on my furnace and it costs me such and such dollars from my electricity company to create a comfortable living environment for my family. Well, what if I can plug a Bitcoin miner in, use that same electricity that I was already paying for, but do it with a Bitcoin miner that stacks sats at the end of the day? And yeah. So that is what our movement's all about. And I've done this. I've built a Bitcoin miner into my home, into my furnace setup, to where instead of turning on the furnace, I turn on a Bitcoin miner. It turns on, it heats my house. And for the last 2 heating seasons, So the end of the beginning of the winter, or the end of the winter in 2024. So like January to March, I heated my house with an S9. And this last winter, you know, September to now, I mean, now it's starting to get warm. The Bitcoin miner doesn't turn on, but I've heated my house with Bitcoin. And
that is awesome.
It's awesome. So it's great. So I'll stop it there because I've been going on a diatribe for a long time, and I'll just let us break into this a little more.
Well, so, and I'm just kind of curious because you and I, there's mirrors in a lot of different things. I bought an S9 a couple years back because I think me and my buddy that we, you know, did the BitByte podcast with, we wanted to dive into using basically stranded natural gas and use miners to create some Bitcoin and hopefully get some, you know, get some of that that stranded gas out of the field to be able to use it. And we bought S9s. It was like, well, let's buy an S9. Let's figure, because I figured we need to understand how the mining operations work.
Figure out the concept.
Yeah, exactly. So I was like, S9, it was cheap. You know, it's kind of out of cycle. I was like, all right, let's pick one of these up. Did the same thing you did. I brought it home, plugged it in, hashed it up, and that thing just, it was hollering like a banshee. And my wife was like, you're not going to leave that plugged in all the time, right? Like, I put it up in my man cave office room thing, my nerd room, whatever you want to call it. I put it up there and I closed the door and it was a little bit better. You know, it was still, you could still hear it. But I mean, if the TV was on, you're like, well, maybe it's okay. I came back in that room the next morning. I only ran it one night and I came back in the room and it was so flipping hot. I was like, oh my God, that thing can heat. I didn't turn it into a heater. I didn't go the range that you went, but I do have a question for you on that. Can you actually regulate that, like the amount of temperature that outputs with the way that you kind of set that up with your home Bitcoin heater?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's not to the point where like I can regulate the exact temperature and ramp down the miner to a certain extent. So the way, and there are ways to do that. My setup isn't so sophisticated as that. I mean, the thing that I love about Bitcoin mining for heat is that you can make it as sophisticated as you want and invest a bunch of money in the infrastructure to make that happen. Or you can make it as easy as possible and just plug it in and unplug it, you know. But the way that most heat furnaces work is it's called bang on, bang off. It's the bang bang method. And so when your thermostat reads the temperature of the room, goes below the threshold that you've set, we'll call it 69 degrees. When it goes below that threshold, your heater kicks on.
Gotcha.
And then it runs until the temperature, the thermostat reads the off temperature. We'll call it 72. So as soon as it hits 72 degrees or 73 degrees, it shuts off. And so it comes on, it shuts off. It comes on, it shuts off. And that is how it regulates temperature in the room. And so that's the way that I've got my system set up. I've used what's called the Wi-Fi PDU switch. It plugs in between the PDU, which is the power distribution unit, and the wall outlet. So the power comes in through the wall, it goes into the PDU switch, and then it goes to the PDU and to the miner. And so the PDU switch is connected to a sensor, a thermal sensor, in my living room. That thermal sensor is like on my phone. I have an app, and I set it to 69 degrees to come on and 72 degrees to shut off. And so literally when my house hits 69 degrees, my Bitcoin miner turns on and it starts to hash. And it hashes that full output, and then it brings the temperature in the room up. And as soon as it hits 72 degrees, the miner shuts down. Now, there are more sophisticated ways to take this. You can actually go into the API settings of your control board on your miner, and like when it comes on, it ramps up to its highest extent. And as that temperature starts to come up, the Bitcoin miner starts to ramp down a little bit. And this allows you to lengthen the duty cycle of your Bitcoin miner. I haven't done this yet. I haven't figured out how to do it. I have a buddy who keeps telling me that he can help me out, and I just haven't invested the time to do it.
Yeah.
And I think I'll do that a little bit more this winter, this next heating season. But the reason why you might want to do that is because Bitcoin miners aren't necessarily designed to ramp up and go down, ramp up and come down. They can do it, but you actually shorten the lifespan of your machine when you're constantly doing this. It's better to bring it up and then like slowly get to that top zone and then like slowly bring it back down. That is like the better way to lengthen the lifespan of your miner.
Okay. And so, and I've got another question for you. And if you don't mind me asking, like, I'm just totally curious about this. How, you don't have to go into too much detail if you don't want to, but how large is your home and how many S9s like are you using to actually
heat it? I love this question. So I have a small house. I have an 800 square foot manufactured home. It's literally a trailer. You know, you've seen them at trailer parks all over the place. It's nice, but it's not that nice.
Right.
And my furnace, so it's about 60 feet long. My furnace is like smack dab in the middle of my home.
Okay.
And the way the furnace works is the furnace sends air down into the floor, and it's got like these metal tunnels that pop up in the floor, pop up in the different rooms. Now I've cut that out completely.
So you got rid of all your ductwork. It's gone.
No, I didn't use the ductwork. And the reason I didn't use the ductwork is because where I live in Oregon, we have rodents. And when I bought my house, the rodents had infested like the ducting. They'd invested the entire underneath of my home. And I spent a year and a half getting rid of them. But you can't get rid of the feces and the rodent, you know, urine and stuff like that. And so they've lived inside of that ductwork. And so every time you turn the furnace on, it sends air through those ducts and that air comes into the house. And I didn't like that.
Yeah.
I didn't like that at all because it smells like rat and, you know, it's not a conducive living environment. So we stopped using that entirely. And the way that my Bitcoin miner works, and to your earlier question, I have one S19. One S19 is enough heat to heat up 1,000 square foot space.
Wow.
To a, yes, I know, it's a lot of heat. And this is just air. This is just air cooled. So what I've done is because the standard fans on an S19 miner, most miners, you know, they're the same fan, they don't push enough air volume, enough CFM to distribute that air evenly throughout a large space. So what you do is you actually remove those fans and you install an AC Infinity fan. These are large industrial grow fans for like marijuana farms and stuff. And they push like 800 CFM at full power.
Okay.
That is enough air movement to not only cool down my miner, but also push that air throughout my entire home. So what I've done is out of the miner go like the fan is on the bottom of the miner and it pushes air up through the miner. From the miner, it goes into a shroud, and out of the shroud is a splitter. It's a Y splitter. So the ducting goes two different directions. And one duct goes up to a baffle plate that sends air this way. And one duct goes up to a baffle plate that sends air that way. And so it basically sits in the middle of my hallway and it shoots air one way down the hallway and shoots air down the other way of the hallway. And this last winter was a use case to just prove that it could work. And there's not a single room in my house that doesn't get cold or doesn't get enough airflow. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. As long as you keep the doors open, I've got a small home, you can do that. Now, this is, to my earlier point, this is a very simple setup. This is literally as simple, like not as super simple, but like it's as sophisticated as I wanted to make it this winter. You can duct these into your existing ductwork. You can leave it, like you can duct it through your HVAC. You can use the fan on your HVAC as a blower motor. Like there are so many different ways that you can take it. I've seen people set up an S19, run it straight up to their ductwork and push that air into their ductwork before their heater. So the thermostat in their heater only kicks on when the S19 isn't pushing enough air.
Okay. Okay. I got you. Yeah, that's pretty clever that you could do that. Now that's
a lot.
That's very impressive. I know we're coming up on the hour here, and I know we were talking about just having an hour time today, but I do want to ask
you go a little bit longer.
I do want to ask you another question too, especially with the rise of, you know, we got like Marathon, we've got all these corporate publicly traded mining companies that are existing out there. What is your thought on Bitaxes, you know, home mining in general? Do you think that this is a good trend for people? I mean, obviously, the other question with your S19 that you're running now, are you doing solo mining or are you in a pool? What are you doing with that?
Yeah. So I'll answer the second question. I mine with my S19 to a pool. I mine to ocean pool because I do want to stack sats on a daily basis. And the reason being is that I'm already paying for that electricity for heat. I would like to get some sort of rebate.
Refund. Yeah,
exactly. I do solo mine. I've got a little Kanon Avalon mini miner there that I solo mine. Obviously, I've got my bit axes. I solo mine with those. So I am solo mining, but with my one at home, I do mine to a pool. Now, my thoughts on the solo mining, the home mining space, it hit with bit axes specifically, because home mining is getting bigger, especially with heat reuse and the heat pumps. Bit axes are phenomenal. I freaking love these things, dude. Like, these little teeny tiny one chip miners are amazing, because this is fundamentally, it's a Bitcoin miner.
Yeah.
It's the exact same thing as, you know, my S19 right there. It's the same thing, just on a 300th of the scale. Power supply is smaller, the cooling solution is smaller, the chip is one, you know. Yeah. So the board is smaller. But what's great about it is that I can learn about Bitcoin mining. I can learn how to set up a node. I can learn how to set up the like actual like wallet software configuration on the miner, set up the IP address on the miner itself, without buying a $6,000 miner. Like this S21s right now, they're like $6,000. Yeah. You know, you get an S19 for like $300-$400, but then you also have to deal with the facts is like, do you have a dedicated power supply, which you need for the S1s? You need 220 watts like or volts. You need a lot of power. This thing, it takes 50 watts. You plug it into the wall, turn it on, and it takes 50 watts. And this little teeny tiny fan on here doesn't make a lot of noise.
No.
So they're quiet. They don't produce a lot of heat. They're very insignificant. And it teaches you about Bitcoin. Now, to the point of like decentralizing hash rate, it's like, is one of these things going to do a lot? No. But what can a million bit axes do? I mean, when you look at a Bitcoin miner like the S21, it's got, I want to say, like 300 chips on it. It produces 240 terahash roughly. When that Bitcoin miner finds a block, it's only one chip inside of that miner that actually does the proof of work to find that block.
Yeah.
So 200 of these makes up one S19. 300 of these makes up one S21. So when we geographically distribute a million bit axes all over the world, not only are we increasing the education and the adoption of the Bitcoin network, but we are decentralizing the hash rate that secures the network.
Yeah.
So I don't think that one bit axe is going to make a difference. I don't think that it's going to change the lives of many people, because it's an infinitesimally small chance that you're going to mine a Bitcoin block with a bit axe. It can be done. It has been done. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, going back to the ideological perspective, we as Bitcoiners want to make sure that Bitcoin proliferates into the future so that we have something to hand to our children and they don't fuck it up.
Yeah.
Well, the only way to do that is to increase network hash rate and geographically distribute it. All these giant large pubcos like the Riots and the Marathons that are producing gigawatts of power to mine in one location, that is a giant elephant that can be shut off at the flip of a switch by a government entity that just decides, I don't like you.
Yeah, we're not doing that anymore. We saw it with China, right?
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm getting at. So what happens if all of the hash rate is dedicated to all of these large pubcos? Well, the Bitcoin mining network gets, you know, 2/3 not as strong or half not as strong. Whereas if there are home miners, if there are dedicated people that are going to mine Bitcoin no matter what, and they have hash rate geographically distributed across the world, rabbits per se. I mean, are you familiar with Bob Burnett? Rabbits, horses, and the elephants?
No, I don't think I've heard that.
Oh, dude, I love this story. So I got a little bit more time, so I'll dive into this.
Okay.
So the rabbits, horses, and the elephants. So you look out into a field and you see, you know, 1,000 elephants, and you decide that you want to start shooting, getting rid of these elephants. You start shooting. The elephants are slow. They're cumbersome. They're huge targets. Okay. And you can pick off, you know, a good majority of these elephants before they're all gone. Okay. Those elephants are analogous to the large pubcos, your Marathons, your Riots, your, you know what I'm saying? The big, huge industrial miners.
Right. Yeah.
If the government wants to come in and shut them down, they're in one geographic, they're one central location, they're owned by one entity, and it's easy to turn them off. Then you have your horses. And the horses, they're smaller, but they're still large. So you look into a field of 1,000 horses, and you start shooting the horses. And you know what? You're going to get a good majority of them before they're all gone, but you're not going to get all of them.
Right. Yeah.
Right?
They're fast. Those move quick. Yeah.
Exactly. Those are your 1 to 20 megawatt miners. Those are your barefoots. Those are your, you know, the small guys who are building up a good size amount of hash rate. They can shut off and they can move to a new location and they can turn back on. But the rabbits, you look into a field and you see 1,000 rabbits and you start shooting, you're going to get 3 or 4 of them before all those rabbits freaking scatter to the wind and they're gone. The rabbits are people like me. The rabbits are people that have, you know, below 1 megawatt. We're just mining in our homes. We're using our power. Maybe we found an industrial setting like a shop or a warehouse that has enough power to, you know, power like 100 of these miners or whatnot. But we're the kind of guy that can literally in a matter of a day, unplug all of our machines, move them to a new location and turn back on without ever skipping a beat.
Yeah.
So to the point of rabbits, horses, and elephants, we need more rabbits and horses. We need more people who are geographically distributed, decentralized around the world, so that if there is the inevitable attack on Bitcoin, we can pick Bitcoin back up no matter what and make sure that it thrives and it survives.
And that it continues. Yeah, and I think what's important for people to understand, if they don't understand this yet, when you have a company like BlackRock that's involved in the environment now, it's basically within their terms of service that they get to dictate what is the protocol that is followed for Bitcoin. Yep. And unless the hash rate is decentralized enough, they can manipulate. I mean, I think they're one of the biggest shareholders of like Marathon, those types of things, where they could say, hey, no, you're going to use this fork. Otherwise, we're going to pull your funding, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, if they pull that, if that fork all of a sudden has the most hash power, then that becomes the chain that's going to continue. Whereas if you have a lot of those rabbits, like what you're talking about, that's a way to make sure it stays decentralized and that it can continue on.
And let me tell you something. This is something that Rob Warren and I talked about on my podcast with him. We're like a sleeping dragon. These rabbits, these heat punks, these home miners, hash punks is what Solo Satoshi's calling us. We're sleeping dragons. So I have at my disposal right now about 300 terahash. If I overclock that on all of my miners, I can get maybe 350, but I'm only utilizing at, you know, 20% of the time, I'm only utilizing about 120, 150 terahash.
Yeah.
So if that attack happens, if that, you know, what you're talking about with BlackRock starts to come about, am I just going to sit back and let BlackRock attack me? Hell no. Okay. I'm going to take every single miner that I have and I'm going to plug it in. And I'm going to turn it full blast. I'm going to open all the windows and I'm going to spend every ounce of money that I have to making sure that Bitcoin is secured. And this is something that I'm not the only one. There are, I would venture to guess, tens of thousands of us just learning, just building out our hash rate. There are probably, you know, less than 1,000 heat punks right now, but they are slowly building and we are growing. This is a movement that cannot be stopped. And we are a sleeping dragon that I truly believe, especially when you take in the factor of like running your own node, you know, mining your own, creating your own mining template, block templates, and running your own hardware. I truly believe that the core ethos of Bitcoin will survive, whether it forks and splits. We will continue to mine off of this. We will continue to push this forward. And it may take an extra 10 or 20 years to get to where we believe Bitcoin is going, but it will get there.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. I mean, I got a NerdX recently and I just got my Canon little, what is that one?
The Avalon 3?
Yeah.
The Nano 3?
The 3, yeah. I think of the 3S.
Yeah, yeah. So you got the 6 terahash one.
Yeah.
There you go.
So I was like, I can't run the crazy loud at home, but
no,
I'm like, I'm going to contribute. And I mean, I run a node and yeah, I want to see the decentralized nature of it all kind of continue. So.
Yeah. And you're not the only one. That's the thing. That's the point. Like the fundamental point is that like there are thousands of us and tens of thousands more being onboarded every year. You know what I mean? Like when you think about it, people want security. People want to be able to live a quality life where, you know, you go to work, you earn an honest living, and you can afford the things that you want to do in your life. You know, most people don't give a shit about being rich. Yeah. I sure as hell don't. But I do want to make sure that my wife and son are fed, that they have good clothes on their back, that they're not being poisoned by toxic chemicals and toxic foods and all these things. I want to be able to watch my kid play in the yard with the dogs and grow chickens and all those things. It's a modest life.
Yeah.
I'm not asking for a lot. But when you think about it, it's like, what can Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining do for that person? It can do a significant amount, you know, and when people start to understand that, they're going to come into Bitcoin in droves. And I think that it just takes time because not everybody's on the same footing. Not everybody has the same perspective. You know, we talk about our journeys, what it took for us to get here. We came into that from the very beginning with a certain perception, a certain understanding of life, and we came into Bitcoin seeking that better life.
Yeah.
You know, you read the book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. You had this this perception that the money system is broken. I came into Bitcoin reading the Warren Buffett Way and trying to understand how to invest my money better. Look, we're looking for a solution to this problem. Right now, most people are not looking.
Right.
And it hasn't gotten bad enough for them to start looking. Once they start looking, it changes.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting with the, even though, you know, you and I, you know, we're almost a generation apart in age. And then we look at the similarities though of our journey. I think a lot of people, they're going to have to go through a lot of different things. And some people may actually have to go through a lot harder things to grasp it, but you know, quicker than what we did. But it's all that step and it's all those journeys that we've got to take together to get there.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, you know, it's why we're doing what we're doing. It's why you have a podcast. It's why I have a podcast, is so that when people decide that they want to start making that step, we have hundreds of different viewpoints, perceptions, and ways to explain it so that, you know, like, not everyone's going to jibe with my podcast.
Yeah.
Not everyone's going to listen to my podcast. And that's not the point. The point of me doing a podcast is not to get 100,000 followers and have everybody watching my podcast like Joe Rogan. That's not the point. The point is that if somebody finds my podcast and if someone resonates with it, they will start to understand Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining and how it can be a benefit to their life. And if I can solve the problem for one person, I've already succeeded.
Job done. Yeah, no, I completely agree. Like, I mean, I've been doing podcasting now for over a decade. I'm not necessarily just a BitBite, but I mean, like, I've done other podcasts. And obviously, I'm not like a big podcast guy. Like, oh, yeah, no, I know that guy. No, but I enjoy doing it. And I enjoy delivering a message that I can deliver. And if, like you said, if somebody can resonate with it, that's the win. I mean, yeah, if it ends up getting big, great. Like, that's just a bonus. But that's not the reason.
Yeah. This isn't my day job. Like, I do this for fun. You know what I mean? Like, I literally am building a contract construction company that I do for my day job. I do this for fun because I enjoy talking about Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining.
Yeah.
For me, it was like, I was so tired of my wife rolling her eyes every time I talked about Bitcoin. It was like, all right, I'll get in front of a camera and a microphone and somebody will listen to me.
Somebody will want to talk to me about it.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
No, for sure.
Oh man, well shoot, you know, this was a lot of fun, Hans. I kind of want to do this again.
I know, I would totally be down. There's more questions I want to ask you about the home heating. And I think there's some more things that we could kind of dive into on this.
Yeah, we should after this, let's schedule another one, you know, for a month or two out, cuz I think this was a lot of fun and I want to keep doing these. These collabs are fun too cuz we can, you know, kind of open up the door into each other's communities and stuff.
Yeah.
I do have to get going here because duty calls. I got to go out and hammer some nails, that kind of thing. But on the Build a Mind podcast, we have a tradition that every new guest, I ask a very important question.
Oh.
So Hans, I want to ask you, what does Bitcoin mean to you?
Oh, I'm going to give you the most generic answer I can give you. It's hope. When I told you when I read Jekyll Island at the beginning, like it left me in despair. And Bitcoin, it gave me hope for a brighter future for tomorrow, not only for me, but for my family and friends too. So yeah, it was hope.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's what it is for me too. I think, again, going to what you said earlier, is like we do have a lot of similarities in our stories,
yeah.
Different generations, different methods to finding it. But, you know, I'll end with this. And maybe we can pick this back up when we do this again. I have lived a life where I have battled with my self-image. I have battled with my self-worth. I have battled with demons and depression, anxiety. And I've literally battled this since I was a kid.
Yeah.
And this comes from, you know, this comes from a broken family. This comes from not feeling worthy or valuable or whatever it comes from.
Same.
As a man, your self-worth is tied into what you can bring to the table, what you can offer the people around you. And so before I got into Bitcoin, after I'd gotten married, I don't want to get super dark and super heady, but I went through a very, very dark time in my life where I didn't know if I could make it through. And when I found Bitcoin, it was like finding God. It was like finding that light at the end of the tunnel to guide you out of that despair, to bring you to a point where you could start to evaluate the things in your life, look at it and say, this is what I want. This is what I don't want.
Yeah.
I can get rid of this. I'll keep that. And for the last 2.5 years, I have lived a life where, dude, I'm not rich. I'm not well. Like, I'm wealthy in the fact that I have a lot of people around me that I love. But on a monetary standard, I am not wealthy by any means. I bust my ass every single day. But you know what? I am happy.
Yeah.
I am in a place where I look at what I have and I am grateful. Because not many people can look at that and say, I'm good. You know what I mean? And there are things that I want to do in this life. There are things that I want to continue to accomplish. But Bitcoin, because it is hope, it gave me hope for a better future and to reevaluate the way that I'm living my life. And I think that happens on a fundamental perspective for a lot of people.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. And I just want to add one more thing to that. And back to, because you can look at that outlook and you know 10 years from now, where you're at now, because of Bitcoin, you will be in a better place.
Yep.
And it's one of those things. Yeah, it's fundamentally life-changing.
Absolutely. Well, Hans, this was a lot of fun.
I enjoyed it.
I really enjoyed this. We're going to do this again. So to the audience, you know, let us know what you thought of this episode. Make sure, you know, to the Build a Mind fans, make sure you go out and follow the BitByte podcast. Is there anywhere else where people can find you? I know that they can find you at BitByte on X, but just any shout outs, last remarks.
If you ever want to find any of my other podcasts with the Eclectic Podcast, you can jump on and find that there. It's pretty much the same place anywhere you can find the BitByte podcast. But yeah, for all of my listeners as well, like if you're into the mining aspect and you want to hear more about Trevor's journey, I check out the Build a Mine podcast as well. So,
yeah, and you can follow me. You can follow me on X. You can follow my personal account just at Trevor Bello. So you can find me. A lot of my posts on Build a Mine are different than the regular posts on Build a Mine because, to be completely honest, I do have a media guy who helps build the Build a Mine Twitter. So it's not always me on there, but if you want to just hear my ramblings, generally just follow my personal
account. I'll have to follow you on there. Yeah, because my BitByte pod is my personal, but yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, it's a little bit different, different dynamics, but yeah, this was a lot of fun, man. No. I appreciate you coming on and I look forward to doing this again.
Yeah, me too. Thanks, Trevor.
All right. Take care, brother.
Bye.